Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning to you. 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Jack Lancaster is here as well today.
Good morning.
He has it's just a white t-shirt, but on the white t-shirt is a whole bunch of really shiny stuff making up a dragon's head.
There's a name to this dragon.
Okay, what's the
It's Quetzalcoatl.
Oh, that's Quetzalcoatl right there? Okay, nice.
Yeah, my wife got this for me in Mexico.
Jack is steeped in Mexican history because his wife is a Mexican.
We went down there last month. Had a great time.
Yeah.
Did the pyramids. Did the Xochimilco, which is the canals.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient Aztec canals.
You sent me some videos.
Yeah. Went to the Island of the Dolls.
Yeah, that's a little creepy.
Yeah, but it was a good time. We had a good time down there.
Island of the Doll, maybe you could explain exactly what that is for those that have never heard of it.
So, it's an island along this canal system, and the legend is, the story is, it's not a legend, I think it's a true story, but the man that used to live there, one day he, I forget the exact circumstances, but a small girl drowned, and he found her, and he was very sad for her, so he brought dolls to the island for the girl's spirit to play with. And then he just kept bringing more and more dolls. Then other people started bringing dolls in. And now this island is covered in dolls. And they're creepy. Half of them are burned. And
snakes coming out of the mouth.
The spiders are everywhere.
Spiders everywhere.
Oh. And then we had our guide, the guy with the guy that pushed our boat over to the island, which is about an hour from where you start. So it's quite a little journey. Most people don't go there. He shared us a video of a ghost that he thinks might be a ghost of a woman, a different situation. A woman drowned her children in the canals. Ooh. And then she drowned herself, and now she haunts the island as a ghost. And there I've got video of her, of this white apparition that he shared on the phone.
are you a ghost guy? I'm Bigfoot is one of your things. And
I enjoy watching the Ghost Adventure guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they did an episode of the Island of the Dolls.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So when I came back, I watched it. It was fun.
Did they find anything while they were there?
Yeah. One of the dolls started laughing at him that didn't have any batteries in it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little creepy, man.
Yeah, they were very freaked out about the whole thing.
Yeah,
because
boss stuck his head in. Hi, boss.
What's up, gentlemen?
So, hi. So, yeah, it was
fun.
He
hates it when I acknowledge him. I'm supposed to ignore him and keep talking. He hates it when I do that.
So. So it was trippy. But, you know, Mexico City is a very ancient city, as you probably are aware, and a lot of stuff that's happened there over the years. So they said also in the Ghost Adventures story, I didn't know this until I watched it, that the Zapatistas, or the people who were fighting in the revolution, the second Mexican revolution, the folks that they killed, they threw their bodies they buried them in the canal. So when they dredged out the canals, once they brought up a whole bunch of bones.
Those are not going to be real clean canals. Decomposed bodies.
I wouldn't be doing any swimming in there.
When I said Tuesday earlier in the show, it's actually Wednesday. President Trump has declared it Liberation Day for America. Now, what has happened is, for years, as long as you and I have been alive, countries have been putting tariffs on American goods. So if you say you create, maybe you were good at making the widget, right? I make widgets here in Utah, right?
Uh-huh.
And Calgary, some folks up in Calgary found out about my widgets, and they really need widgets up there in Calgary. And so they found me online and said, hey, we want to buy some of your widgets. Now, if I put together a box of widgets, say 144 of them, and I want
to... That's a gross.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to send them to Calgary. Well, guess what? There's a tariff on those goods going. And what's a tariff? Well, that means that Canada is going to charge money for me to send those across the border to Calgary. And those people in Calgary can use my widgets only if they're willing to pay that extra money. So the people in Calgary are like, you know, those widgets are good, but there's a guy over in Edmonton that makes widgets that are almost as good, and they don't have a tariff on them. So never mind the gross, the box, whatever, of widgets. We're just going to buy them over here from Edmonton, and my deal is crashed.
Yeah.
I'm toast.
Also, I'll give you a better example. If you're a farmer in Montana,
mm-hmm.
and you want to sell, you're a dairy farmer, and you want to sell your milk into
across the border there.
Yeah, across the border up there in Alberta. You pay a 200% tariff on your dairy products.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's, yeah. And we don't put a tariff on dairy products coming out of Canada.
I was struck when I went to Europe at the lack of American cars there. I was like, where are all the American cars? How come they don't drive? America makes pretty good cars, you know?
Yeah,
we have some decent cars. Well, then I got looking into the tariff thing, and they charge a huge tariff on, Ford Company wants to sell an F-150 pickup anywhere in Europe, there's a huge tariff there. And
so
the end buyer, the consumer, uh-huh. would have to pay that difference.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't put those reciprocal type tariffs
on German cars
or, I guess, Italian cars. I don't know who else makes cars in Europe.
Well, you got Germany. Peugeot, the French. And you've got the Mini Cooper, and you've got all kinds of European cars.
Is Land Rover British?
Land Rover is British. BMW is uh-huh. German.
Mercedes-Benz.
Mercedes are Germans, yeah. So,
I can tell you, though, in England, you wouldn't want to be driving an F-150 around on those roads.
That's true.
The gas prices over there is about $6.50 a gallon.
Yeah. Well, so. No, it's really cheap per liter. You're like, hey, there's a gallon of gas for only, you know, $3.
But I did see a fair amount of Fords.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. I saw a lot. They're small.
I saw two or three.
It was a brand of, in England, it was a brand of Ford that you don't see over here.
Oh, you know what? I'll bet they make them there.
They probably make them over there, But they had the Ford badge on them.
Yeah.
Okay. Saw a lot of Mercedes in England.
So what President Trump is doing, why he's declared this Liberation Day, starting on Wednesday, there will be reciprocal tariffs on a lot of the goods that come from those countries, including Canada, China, the European Union, et cetera. And President Trump, these are not, in my mind, I talked to Jimmy Keston about this, but in my mind, these are not bluff tariffs. These are tariffs to compensate for what they charge for our goods.
Yeah, because we have a trade deficit. In other words, we send more money goes to them than comes back in goods and services. And, for example, in Europe, you know, when you look at the European Union, there's about 500 million people there, and their economy is about the same size as the United States. So there's no reason that we should be, you know, having a trade deficit like that with them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense. And so their wages are what they are. The thing is here's the thing that's not fair, and this is the thing that Trump talks about, is that the United States pays for the defense of every other North, you know, allied type country.
Some of which don't even have armies.
And so what they do is they take that money and they put it in their social welfare programs. And so we're protecting everybody at our dime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the ones going to war with the Houthis in the Suez Canal. Well, only 10% of that trade comes to us when 90% of that trade goes to Europe.
That makes sense.
So why isn't the European countries over there, you know, fighting that battle?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It doesn't make any sense.
And that's the point.
And then, you know, and then just recently in the last couple of years, the Ukraine-Russian war, and Ukraine keeps asking for more and more money. And you know who they're asking for money from?
They're asking from us.
A little bit Europe, but mostly from us.
Mostly from us. And the thing is, the Europeans are there. I will say that I agree that it's somewhat complicated. You don't, based on history, I don't think you want the Germans to build up an army again.
No.
Last one didn't work out so well. So I think there is a hesitation for that to happen. But on the other hand, you know, you need that. It's like when I was in England last summer. I would engage in conversations. People hear my American accent. The first thing, of course, this was in August. So the first thing they want to talk about is, I can't believe you guys are voting for Trump over there. And I go, you better hope to heck we get Trump. I says, you need somebody to help you to defend Putin because, you know, Kamala's going to be a pushover. I'm sorry. She has no idea what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
So, somebody asked President Trump, they said, hey, that means that foreign cars are going to cost more in the U.S. because they're going to reciprocal higher tariffs and everything. President Trump actually said something I think was pretty profound. He said, I hope so. And they're like, wait, what? He says, yeah, I hope they charge more for a Toyota or a Nissan or a Subaru or a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW. And they said, what do you mean? He says, well, if they charge more for that, then maybe Americans will start buying Fords and Chevys and whatever Dodges says, Stellantis or whatever, American cars and things that are made in America. And he said that, you know, Teslas are 100%. No parts of a Tesla were made in any other country except the United States. Teslas are 100% American.
I thought he had the batteries made in China.
I don't know. I read a graphic yesterday. He said what percentage of cars are made and Tesla was 100% in the U.S.
Okay.
So, anyway, just food for thought when maybe some goods are going to go up a little bit, you know, but I think it might. It's like a pill. We got to swallow this pill. We can swallow this pill. In 6 months, it's going to be a lot better. We're going to feel better.
Well, it's going to help the middle class. It'll help the inflation situation, I think, in the long run, and it will help bring all that money back into the United States, and that's going to be a big deal. That's actually going to be a really big deal.
I agree. All right. Hey, I wanted to talk for a minute about, now you and I are past the child rearing stage, right?
Yes.
We don't have to worry too much about what they're teaching in school. We're concerned about it, but it doesn't affect
us. I do have a daughter in college.
Okay. Yeah. I have two daughters in college as well. But this was Elon Musk posted this video, and I thought it was kind of, you know, maybe gives us some perspective, you and I, Jack, on what a young mom might be faced with right now.
Hi, I'm Kaylee Weichbrot. I'm a mom of two in Fairfax County. This is my
Virginia
oldest, and my husband and I have a difficult decision to make this fall as he is approaching preschool age, and we are faced with the decision of whether or not we are going to put our child in public school system where Fairfax County has decided to move forward with instituting gender studies in elementary school. Mm-hmm. Despite having done a study group, a focus group in the community to see if parents even wanted this. And when parents said no, the board voted 16-0 and said we're moving forward anyways. This shows clearly that they see parents not as partners, but as an obstacle for their agenda. And I have a really hard time looking at him and going, here, I'm just going to give you over to people who do not want to partner with me in how you're going to be raised. School and education is a huge part of a child's life. Mm-hmm. And early childhood is supposed to be filled with exploration and creativity and fun, not debating issues that are for adults to handle.
Yeah. So, you know, even though you and I are past these kinds of decisions as far as raising our own kids, it gives me pause to think about what a young mom and dad are having to deal with. Now, we're somewhat a little bit better off here in Washington County in Utah, but it is a scary thing. I remember the very first day my very first kid went into school, AJ, in kindergarten, and I bawled like a baby after he left because I was like, that's it. That's the end of the, you know, to borrow a Don Henley title, that's the end of the innocence.
Yeah.
And I was scared to death of what the school, what his fellow kids, what his teacher, what they were going to do to him.
You know, it's funny, you and I, and every single one of the school board people that she was referring to went to an elementary school that did not have a gender study program.
Right. Right.
Look how screwed up we became. How the hell did we survive?
Yeah.
Why they think that's more important, it's interesting. They must not be, if these people voted 16-0 for that, or to implement it, if you will.
Gender studies.
Then they must not be accountable to the parents or to the population.
They could.
They must not be elected school board members or whatever it is that they're making these decisions. There's no way that a politician would be that far, unless, you know, they're complete ideologues. I mean, if I was her, I would just say, I'm not going to put my kid in school or I'm going to homeschool. I don't know. Those are difficult decisions because homeschooling is mostly not an option for folks with a two-parent, you know, working families.
Yeah, not nowadays. The price of homes, you can't afford to have someone home all day.
And charter schools, I don't know what it's like in Virginia. I know that there's a few of them here, but That's tough.
And then, and you look at private school, expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what are your options? They dwindle, don't they?
I don't know. That's really a hard one. And I would be furious if that was my situation. Absolutely
furious.
Would
you be mad enough to move?
I probably would consider it.
Because to me, I see that as the only answer right now.
Or put my kid in a different school district that doesn't have that. If the commute wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. And I don't know in Virginia what the school district situation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you lived, say, in.
But I think Fairfax is the one that's the suburb of D.C.
Is it?
Yeah. And they're the ones that called the FBI on the school board.
Super
moms.
Liberal. Yeah, yeah. Super liberal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, you know, if you lived in Washington school district and you had some problem with the school district and wanted to go to a different district, if you lived in St. George, what are you going to do? You're going to
like I said, you don't have a choice here. I mean, back there, the population's more dense, so maybe there's division lines.
It could be. We don't know.
But I think that the governor of Virginia is a Republican. I'm pretty sure that he is now.
Yeah.
And, so that could be an option to take it to the governor's office and say, Virginia governor. I just did a thing on my phone.
He's doing a search. Yeah.
Who is the Virginia governor?
He talks to his phone and it actually listens to him. Unlike a teenager. Your phone's not a teenager.
Glenn Youngkin. Yeah, he's a Republican.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so maybe
that's good. Virginia has had a reputation of being a blue state, so to have a red governor, maybe they can figure things out. So, one of the things that bothered me, and I talked to Jimmy Keston about this morning, was Donald Trump talking about the possibility of there being a third term for him, and I was like, "Wait, no, that's against the law. That's the 22nd Amendment. There is no third term for a president."
And that feeds right into the conspiracy guys.
It really does
against Trump.
Well, and they shouldn't
be talking like that.
Yeah, they actually asked him, and he said, "Oh, yeah, it's worth looking into." That made me nervous. A little bit nervous.
That, I think, is the one. That's a bridge too far for me.
I'll go along with that. Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to support Trump on a third term.
No.
I wouldn't do that.
Now, if Trump...
And I think he should shut up about it and his people shouldn't talk about it because it's stupid.
If he handpicks someone, maybe it's J.D. Vance or whoever to replace him.
That's what Obama did with whoever. I mean, every president wants to pick a successor.
Yeah.
But you are term limited by the U.S. Constitution, and you're not going to get a constitutional amendment this quickly to change that.
No way.
And there's no way two-thirds of the states are going to vote that.
All right,
I think there's a very good reason we limit our presidents to two terms. I mean, when FDR went to four terms, everybody in the country's going, wait a minute here. We could really have a problem.
King, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I have no doubt in my mind that if Ronald Reagan wanted to be elected in 88 to a third term,
he would have won
easily.
Yeah.
Because things changed from 80 to 88. This country got a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he knew. He didn't even think about it. So I think that's. I love Donald Trump and what he's policy wise. Sometimes he says things I'm just like, oh man, why you got to go there?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, like I said, he can be his own worst enemy. His first term.
Yeah, it's true. Jack Lancaster is with me on the program today. I think what we're going to do, we're going to get a break in right now as we get close to time for weather. And I think now she said she was going to be here, but I've got someone coming on the show to talk about. You know, today is the last day of Women's History Month.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the notable women in history, and we'll let Jack and I talk to her a little bit about some of the cool moments. A retired history teacher.
All right,
coming
awesome.
Up on the show here in just a minute. Right now, let's check weather.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. Jack is here whistling. The old Quetzalcoatl shirt guy. Yeah. Also with me is Janine Burton today. And hi, Janine. How are you?
Hi there.
She adds a little class to the studio today. Thank you for doing that. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Janine is Miss Senior USA. She is a city council person for Santa Clara City, and she is a retired history teacher, correct?
That's right.
How long did you teach history?
For just over 26 years.
And at the high school, middle school, what level?
Both.
Both, mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
I started out at Preston High School for 3 years.
Preston, Idaho?
The fun thing about that was I taught some of those kids that were on Napoleon Dynamite. That's my claim to fame.
All right.
I got to ask you, when were you in Preston? Because I worked in the newspaper there for a while.
Oh, you did?
For a year. Well,
it was in the 80s, so
like
that'll
ladies?
Really date me there. Yeah, it was in
because I was there
the
in
mid,
89. In
no,
89 and 90, you're already gone. Okay, yeah. All right. But I might have interacted with some of the people you knew.
Right.
Did you know Wayne Bell? And Wayne?
That sounds familiar.
And he was mayor for a while and stuff. Owned a newspaper.
Yeah.
He was my boss.
Oh, neat.
So, anyway, enough reminiscing. Today, March 31st, is the last day of Women in History, right? Women's History
Month. That's right. We barely made it in there,
yeah,
but
I'm glad we made it, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that this is a fun topic because, generally speaking, you read history books and they're from the mouths and the eyes and the perspective of men.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's get some perspective of women, shall we?
Well, you know what? I have to tell you, this is kind of an exciting thing for me.
Okay.
I just got inducted into the DAR, which is the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Ooh, nice.
And so it took about a year to finally get a patriot that I connected to, because it takes a lot of genealogy work and things to connect you to a patriot. Back to the Revolutionary
War. So you have to be a daughter of the American Revolution to be in the Daughters of American
Which
Revolution.
Which makes it exactly...
Legitimizes a little bit, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it made it exciting.
As a history professor, did you... I'm curious about this because, first of all, I loved history class, one of my favorite classes, especially in college. I took a history class once. It was, I remember the first thing we studied was Salem witch trials.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't, here's what happened. They were, you are a private investigator, find out what happened. That
yes,
was so much fun.
That's exciting.
It was so much
when
fun.
When you do more hands-on type of experiences in the classroom, I find out that you learn a lot more like that, collaborating with other students and getting to know the research of it all. I hated history in high school.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Not to be mean or anything, but I had I had teachers that were more involved with coaching, and that was kind of their secondary assignment. And so they would say, sit and read this. Be extremely quiet, and if you're not, they'd come and slap a ruler on your desk and scare you to death.
Ah, those were the days. Or if you fell asleep, they'd throw an eraser at your head.
So in college, I was the same way as you. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I found out, wow, I really like history, and I kept taking more history classes until I had a minor in it. I'm going, what am I going to do with this?
Hey, how did that happen? Jack, were you a history guy at all?
I was more of a history person now than I was back in school.
Yeah.
But, I enjoy history a lot, actually. I feel like we can learn so much from what's going on.
Yeah. When my students would say, well, what about this or that? And I didn't know the answer to it. I'd say, I don't know. And they go, well, you're the teacher. Why don't you
know
about this?
You're supposed to know everything.
And I'd say, well... The thing I've learned is the more you learn about history, the more you learn that you don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Yeah, fun fact, Utah was the first state to allow
women to vote.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that. But didn't we have the first female senator, too, or something like that?
Yes,
we
did. And she is now in the...
She has a statue.
Statue,
yes. Tell us about it. Do you know anything about her?
Martha... Hughes Cannon, I believe that's her name. And, I don't know too much about her, except that
I did that to you, just like the students did, right? Why don't you know?
She's a great lady. She's a great lady.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I was going to tell you that a lot of people that study history or want to know about the women of the Revolution, we hear about all the Revolutionary War heroes that were men. And I love them all, believe me. Doesn't matter if they were men or women. I love them all. And it takes a lot of courage to, you think about the courage that they had back then. And we're faced with a lot of courage nowadays where we don't feel like we can speak up about certain subjects, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you do, you're a bad person, and you're ridiculed.
They're going to throw racist cocktails at your car. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I know that a lot of people know about Martha Washington, who helped George Washington in the camps, especially at Valley Forge. And Betsy Ross, we know that George Washington asked her to make the first patriotic flag. Mm-hmm. We know about Abigail Adams. She was John Adams, our president's wife, and the thing that she did was she spoke to her husband quite often about giving the women's right to vote and also giving the women rights to education. And that was really neat. Those are wonderful women. But there, I want to tell a few stories of people that people might not have heard about, women okay. that are kind of interesting. And anyway, one of them is, her name was Sybil Ludington. And she was the oldest of 12 children. And her father was Colonel Henry Ludington from the local militia there in Fredericksburg, New York. And there was a messenger that came running in to speak to him and was all nervous, gets there off his horse. And he told them that the British troops were attacking near Danbury, Connecticut. And this messenger and the horse were too exhausted to go on any further, and Sybil asked her father, "Can I please run and tell the troops? I'll get on my horse." So, although it was very dangerous, she did get permission from her father, and she got on her horse and spread the news about the British army. And Sybil traveled about 40 miles on her horse through the rain and mud, and luckily, without meeting any of the British troops, she was able to pass the houses and yell to everybody, "Muster at Ludington's!" And she would yell that out, and this meant that the soldiers were to meet immediately at Colonel Ludington's house. And the militia was able to push the British troops back to the ships, and she was known as the Girl Paul Revere. Mm. George Washington personally thanked her for her brave action. Her town renamed their town Ludingtonville. There is a statue of her on her horse in the middle of that city, and each year the city gathers, and actually it's an event where people follow her route to remember her courage.
Very cool.
And you had, I think I saw a picture. You got a picture of that statue, right?
Yes, I do. It's very right there. Cool. Isn't that neat?
That is really neat. Sybil was
Sybil
her first
Ludington.
Name.
I want to go see that now. Now that
she
I
had to, what was she, 12 maybe?
She was 10? In her late teens.
Oh, she was a teenager? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think she was close to 20. Actually.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And that horse was ripped, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They always are on the statue.
Right? Then there's a lady named Deborah Sampson. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. But she came from a family that was so poor that they had to disperse all their children as indentured servants.
Oh.
Isn't that sad? Anyway, the Thomas family took Deborah Sampson in and taught her reading, writing, and arithmetic. And later on, she'd become a teacher and use those skills.
Nice.
So that was kind of neat.
But indentured servant means she also had to work for
she
them,
had to work
right?
For
while they
family.
Taught her, she had to, you know, mm-hmm. clean the house or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
She lived and earned her keep. But Deborah heard about the battles being fought in the American Revolution, and she really wanted to help out. And she wanted to join, but back then they would not let the women join.
Yeah.
And so in 1782, she dressed herself up as a man.
Yentl, was that her name?
Little Yentl, yeah.
Yeah. And she called herself, a.k.a. Robert Shurtleff, Private Robert Shurtleff. And
Bobby.
Yeah. She drilled, she marched, and she actually fought. And she fought in a skirmish, which she got slashed by a saber and shot in the leg by in her thigh. She survived, but because she didn't want anybody to find out who she was, she didn't go to the doctor. And later on, she got very, very ill.
Oh, because you get shot in the thigh, they're going to look down there and they're going to find you're not a god.
Yeah,
and,
yeah okay, exactly. Yeah. So she didn't go get those wounds taken care of, and later on, she suffered from those wounds the rest of her life. And anyway, she did fall sick with a fever. She was kind of out of it, and they found out then. And Deborah would marry and have a family of her own. And with Paul Revere's help, she actually got compensation later on for being a true soldier of the American Revolution.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Impressive.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
Well, there was another lady called Prudence Wright. Are you tired of these stories yet?
No, this is fascinating.
Have you heard of Prudence Wright?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Now, this was a lady who actually formed the first Minute Women group.
I didn't know there was Minute Women. I thought there was just Minute Men.
Okay, well, anyway.
Did you know, Jack?
No, I had no idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know the Minute Men, though.
Of course.
Get ready in a minute's notice and go out there and help.
Yeah.
Well, Prudence Wright overheard an old classmate named Leonard Whiting telling her brother Samuel that there was a message he needed to dispatch to the British. And he was a Tory. So was her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Prudence gathered many of her friends and neighbors and told them that they need to capture them before they got on their horse and got to the British. So what she did is she told all these women to dress up like their husbands. Mm-hmm. And they went out and got their guns and pitchforks and whatever else they could find. And this was the first unit of Minute Women. And at dark, the women hid themselves, and as the first hoof beats came across the bridge, she yelled, "Halt!" And it scared the guy on the horse so bad, and he stopped immediately, and all these women that were patriots came out with their pitchforks and their guns, and it startled Captain Whiting. And he was ordered to dismount off your horse now. And they searched his clothing, and they found in his boot a wad of papers that were the dispatches that was to go out to the British troops. They caught their spy.
Wow.
That's
they
cool.
bound their prisoner and took him with the papers and turned him into the Patriot authorities.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's a cool story.
So Prudence Wright.
Way to go, Prudence.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. That's awesome.
You guys probably know who Margaret Corbin is, though, right?
No.
Okay, you probably know her by her nickname. But
okay.
She actually fought alongside her husband at the Fort Washington that was up in northern New York. And they were completely surrounded by the British Army. And the British cannon fire kept coming into the fort. And there were a lot of women and children as well as the soldiers in there. And her husband was loading the cannon, and she was helping load the cannon, and he got killed by British cannon fire. Well,
oh
she stepped up and took over John's
place. She watched her husband get killed, and
after
she stepped up in his place.
Yes.
Wow.
And isn't that scary? After watching her husband die, and anyway, she gets... Sorry about that.
Okay.
I thought my phone was turned off there. But anyway,
well, it is now.
what happened to her was that she was actually captured after she was hit in the arm by cannon fire, taken as prisoner of war. She never did gain use of her left arm the rest of her life, but she survived to tell the story. And people knew her there as Molly Pitcher. And that's
Pitcher,
who you probably know, because she was like an angel of the battlefield and was helping the other soldiers and everything. But that woman had a lot of guts, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know circumstance dictated, but can you imagine watching your loved one, your spouse, your beloved die right in front of you? And you don't have time to mourn. You don't have time to feel bad. You just got to
get to work.
Get to work.
Exactly.
That's hard for anybody.
Yeah.
Well, anyway... there was one other lady that I wanted to tell you about, and I'll just quickly just tell you this off the cuff. And her name was Elizabeth Hutchinson Warren. Sorry, I just said that wrong. Elizabeth Hutchinson Jackson was her name.
Okay.
And at age 29, her husband died early in life, and she gave birth to her third boy 2 weeks after her husband died at such an early age. So she had to raise three boys on her own, which is pretty scary.
She deserves a medal for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But her sister became incapacitated, and her brother-in-law asked her, "Do you want to have the boys come and live with me, and you can help me take care of my wife," which was her sister. And the Crawford boys and the Jackson boys got together, and they were all excited. They all wanted to join the Patriot Army. And so Elizabeth had three boys, Hugh, Robert, and then she named her third boy, Andrew, after her husband that died. And, you know, the two boys, Hugh and Robert, joined with the other Crawford cousins, and they went and they fought. And Hugh was killed at the Battle of Stone Ferry. Sad. Yeah. And then Cornwallis broke through and took over Savannah, and hundreds of patriots were killed, or, you know, it decimated the South right then. And two of the boys were captured, and Elizabeth went and found out that her boys were actually captured, and she got an exchange going as POWs to go rescue her sons. She went and got them, but Hugh died on the way home with cholera, and Elizabeth captured the same disease from the camp.
Oh, no.
And she died, leaving Andrew, age 14, alone as an orphan at age 14.
Andrew Jackson?
Nope. It actually happened to be him. Andrew Jackson.
The president.
You guessed it.
The seventh
president of the United States.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is really cool. And it goes to show you're right. You're an orphan at 14. Good things can still happen.
Yeah.
If you seize the day, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he and his brother were at the Crawford house, and when they got captured, even though they were young, they were being beaten by the soldiers of the British army. And so Andrew did not like that. And he fought against them in the War of 1812 and helped us win that war.
That's
you mean
right.
Stonewall, that guy?
No. Yeah, well, was that Stonewall?
No.
That was a Civil War.
I thought that was his nickname, Andrew Stonewall.
Oh, that was somebody from the Civil War.
You're thinking of Colonel
Jackson.
Colonel
the Civil War. You're right. It was still the last name. But anyway, he fought alongside some of these pirates that he got together to help, Jean-Pierre, at the Battle of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it was because of him.
I want to sing the song.
I did too.
I know, right?
There's a song about that.
Yeah, great song. Did you ever play that for
your kids? I love that. I played that for my kids, yeah. It was great.
My favorite verse is when the cannon got too hot, so they used the alligators. Filled his head with cannonball and powdered his behind, and when they set the powder off, the gator lost his mind.
Yeah. Yes.
Janine Burton here on with me and Jack. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
This is the Andy Griffin Show here on KDXU. Jack Lancaster, he's with me not as often as we'd like, but he's still here every week or so. We love having you on, Jack.
Thank you.
Janine Burton is here, too. Janine is Miss Senior USA. She is a city council member in Santa Clara, and also a retired history teacher. And Janine, when people say history, you know, did you get a lot of the eye rolling? Oh, boy, history, here we go. Did you get that a lot?
A little, but not too much.
Yeah.
I mean, either people like it or they don't, and sometimes people want to hear your stories, and sometimes they don't. But I think the more that people learn about history, the more they learn that they like it.
Yeah, that's true. And you get to tell stories, right? I mean, that's pretty cool. I love telling stories. Jack loves telling stories.
Yeah, I'm a storyteller.
That's right.
I get all my facts wrong, but it's okay.
What's the point of Women's History Month? What is the goal behind it?
Well, I believe that a lot of times the women don't get a lot of credit for things that they've done in the past, which I think that all of us have women in our lives that we want to thank, like our own mothers who raised us. We have maybe some teachers that had a lot of influence on us. We have maybe neighbors and friends that took care of us, wives that, and your own daughters, you know, people out there. I think that maybe, you know, women today, sometimes it can go overboard, the Me Too movement. I shouldn't even bring that up, but, there's reasons why we need to focus on some of the women just because it got passed up. Some of them got passed up in history, you know?
Yeah, they did. They did. And like I said, when we first started, history is written by men for the most part.
Right.
And it's written about men for the most part. So it's nice to take a minute and reflect on some of the cool things that some women have done. I think, was it Lincoln? One of our presidents said, everything that I am, I owe to my mother.
That was Lincoln. And you brought up Martha Hughes Cannon, and I didn't expand on her very much, but she was one of the first settlers of Utah.
Wow.
And she, at age 14, went to college. It was called the University of Deseret, which became the University of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the first women to ever get her MD.
Wow.
You know? And so she became a doctor. She's very well loved. And yes, she worked on and became like the first woman that was a senator and everything else. And so, she kind of paved the way for women in Utah, I think.
Nice. Do you feel any of that now being on the city council? I mean, you look at, say, St. George City Council. We have a woman mayor.
Yeah.
We have, 3 out of the 5 council members are female. So, women are making their way. They're important.
They are.
Do you feel that?
Yeah, I feel like that. And the only thing that a little bit bothers me is that men have been kind of pushed off to the side.
Yeah, we don't want that either.
And we don't want that. So to focus only on women is wrong. And we, sometimes I feel like just to get a quota of women in a certain area, they hire them over a very well-qualified man. And I'm not for that.
Yeah, so, that almost goes into the DEI stuff. And, you got to have this many people of color and this many females and this many people.
Affirmative action.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I've always been a big believer, and I think you guys are both feel the same way. This is America, and it's a meritocracy in a lot of ways. It's based on how hard you try and what you accomplish and what you do. That's what's important.
Yes.
So.
That's right.
I'm glad you're accomplishing stuff out in Santa Clara.
Well, thank you.
And did you say 24 years, was it, teaching history?
26
years. 26 years teaching history.
I have a question. Are you still learning about things in history that you didn't know?
Yes.
And we got 1 minute to answer.
Yes. I didn't know a lot of these women. And well, I taught about these women, I have to say, the ones that I brought up today. But there's always new ones that you learn about.
Right.
And I just learned that I'm related to a patriot back in the Revolution. I never even knew his name.
Oh.
Whitaker Red, who knew that I was related to him.
Okay.
Nice.
So it's kind of a continual thing. And I love family history because of that, too, to look into your family history.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Jack is married to a woman who was from Mexico, but she is now a naturalized U.S. citizen. She took the test, did everything she needed to do to become an American citizen.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
She's an amazing woman as well.
Very patriotic.
My wife is a shining example for, and I would not be where I am in my life today without her.
She's
absolutely changed. And she is smarter than me, and it really drives me crazy.
He's Jack Lancaster. She's Janine Burton. Thank you guys for coming today. Really great to talk to you. We're out of time. We'll all be back tomorrow.
Thank you.